came in my head. She would follow it up with some version of how she didn't have time to carry me around for 9 months, but she did it anyway. Or how she didn't have time to do our laundry, or make our meals, or clean up some of the horrifying things she found in our bathroom, but she did that too. I go for a different tactic. He might be out of town. Carter. Okay, listen. I'll call now and merge the calls, that way you can yell at him yourself when he answers. Traffic has stopped dead, so I glance down to my phone, switching the line and adding Jonah's number. Right to voicemail. Okay, he didn't answer, I tell her when I switch back over and let my head fall back against the seat. There is no way in hell I'll be able to get out to his place and back in time for my meeting. If he's passed out in a drunken stupor, I'm going to kill him. Let me move some stuff around and I'll drive up there. Thank you, honey. No problem, Mom. Let me know as soon as you hear something, okay? And there's a gate, so I'll text you the code. Will do, I say, scrubbing a hand over my face. I'm able to move my meeting to later in the day with only minimal trouble. Hours away, plenty of time. Malibu is about 30 miles west of Beverly Hills. It takes an hour to get there. Most of the drive I'm making phone calls and deciding how I'm going to kill my brother if I show up and he's not already dead. I point my car onto Latigo Canyon, a two-lane road through chaparral-covered hills and steep wooded canyons with a view of the ocean along every turn. The houses are huge and spread wide up here, most of them hidden from view by tall fences and towering trees. On Jonah Street, I stop to enter the security code into an illuminated keypad. An intricate metal gate opens up onto a long, winding driveway, and at the top of the hill sits the terracotta-tiled house. I'd forgotten how ostentatiously huge his place is. Two stories wrapped in white stucco, it has to be at least 5,000 square feet. My apartment and my parking space could fit into his front room alone. I spot the front of Jonah's black Range Rover around the corner in front of the garage. He'd really better be dead. The ocean wind whips at my hair and my clothes as I climb out of my car. A wide walkway leads up to a set of stained concrete stairs and a massive double door, and I knock twice, turning to look around while I wait. Now that I'm closer, the yard looks a little more unkempt than I'd expect. A set of urns filled with dying flowers border a lawn that could definitely stand to be cut. It's quiet, too. It's early, but not that early. Last time I came, there was music playing from the back near the pool and signs of life everywhere. People coming and going in multiple cars, a yard crew, a pool man, a housekeeper. This time, I don't hear anything coming from inside the house. It might just be my mom's overreaction, Jean rearing its head, but anxiety gnaws at me, a knees prickling along my skin. I'm heading back to my car to call, I don't know, someone. When the door opens behind me. The guy is shorter than Jonah, but fit and tanned in a way that one becomes from spending a lot of time outside. His shorts-only outfit is just one indicator of his cool casualness. I have no idea who he is. Hey, the guy says, waving the floppy slice of pizza in his hand at me. You got through the gate, so I'm assuming you're supposed to be up here. I assume so, I say, and look above the door somewhere for a house number, wondering if it's possible I'm in the wrong place. I'm Carter. Is Jonah here? Recognition dawns, and the guy's face lights up. You're the brother! Man, you two look so much alike. I push up my glasses, tamping down irritation. Is he home? He looks back over his shoulder. Think he's on the patio, he says, and then motions for me to step inside. There's a lot of white in Jonah's house. White floors, white walls, white stairs. But not much else. In fact, there's not much furniture at all. I don't think I caught your name, I say, as I follow the stranger through the enormous entryway. My last apartment could fit in here, as well as my current one and most of Michael Christopher's house. We pass through the kitchen and head toward the back door. Pizza and shorts guy is about my age, with dark, wavy hair and a smile I sort of want to wipe off his face with the back of my hand. If I had to guess, I'd say actor by day, waiter by night. Or kept man? Standing here in Jonah's eerily empty house with this stranger, I realize I don't know my brother that well at all. I'm Nick, he says, and stops in front of the back door. Jonah is out there. And sure enough, there he is, sitting in a chaise longue, in jeans and a leather jacket, next to the giant swimming pool. Thanks, I say, stepping outside. The view is spectacular, and again, I can see why Jonah bought this place. He's high enough up that the horizon stretches out over the hills to reach the ocean from what feels like one side of the world to the other. Palm trees tower overhead, and there's just so much space. But even finally seeing my missing brother, the feeling that things are a little off only grows. The pool is dull, clear brown, and a few stray leaves skip across the ground, spinning lazily on the surface of the water. Pots are empty. The patio has seen better days. "Hey," I say, when Jonah doesn't seem to notice I'm there. "You know it's like 70 degrees outside, right?" He looks over and watches me through his sunglasses. "What are you doing here?" "Mom sent me. Said you haven't been answering her calls." He looks forward again. "Yeah, don't know where my phone is." I take a seat on the chair next to him. "Don't you need it? For, I don't know, work?" He reaches for a beer bottle perched on a glass table by his side and takes a long drink. It's not even 11 yet. I decide to try a different approach. "Who was that?" I ask, inside. "Nick," he says and takes another drink. "I got his name. I mean, does he live here?" "Yeah." I lean forward, resting my elbows on my thighs. Is he the boyfriend?" "Whose boyfriend?" he asks, squinting into the sun. "Well, yours?" Jonah turns his body to fully face me and gives me a look over the top of his sunglasses. "Dude, I don't care who you sleep with," I say, shrugging. "It's not like we talk all that much anymore. Besides, you cut the elastic off all my underwear when I drank your orange juice, threw away my clothes when I left them in the dryer too long, and look like you want to murder anyone who wears shoes inside. The first conclusion I'm supposed to draw is that you have a roommate? You're a nightmare to live with. That Nick is your boyfriend seems like the more likely explanation." He sits back again. "People do change, you know. I'm not that hard to live with." "Sort of. People might be influenced by things, but they don't change who they fundamentally are." "So you're saying that fundamentally, I'm a dick?" I think about it for a moment. "Yeah." This makes him laugh. "And you're an asshole." "Why did you get a roommate?" I ask, but looking around, I'm beginning to think I get it. "Is everything okay?" "Are we about to have a big brother, baby brother talk?" he asks. I would surely get some mom points for it. I guarantee she's in New York right now telling the neighbors you've been sold into some sort of sex ring because you aren't answering the phone. Are you going to let her know you're okay? He shrugs, and I push my hands between my knees to keep from smacking the back of his head. "Are you in trouble? Like, you bought a fucking mansion in Malibu. Money can't be the issue." "Do you have any idea how much it costs to live here?" "I can barely afford my apartment, so yeah," I gesture broadly. "The scope of this is beyond me." "I probably couldn't afford your apartment either right now." He takes off his sunglasses and tosses them on the table. "Dude, it's fucking expensive to be me. I live up here and have parties and have to be seen with the right people and wear the right things. I get in a little over my head, but it was always okay because I'd just do another layout or magazine cover, you know? It was fine because there was always more work." "Was?" Jonah leans his head against the back of his chair and exhales a long, tired breath. "I did a job for this designer, high fashion, and he wasn't happy. I mean, normally I'm cool with some people not liking my work. It's art and open to interpretation, but this, I sort of lost my cool. It was another shoot, but I couldn't seem to get the lighting right. I did some touch-up work to correct the shadows, and it made the rounds of every women's magazine and gossip site, all talking about how I'd doctored the photos to slim down the model and done a shit job of it. Some fashion bloggers tore the shoot and me to pieces. Let's just say things have been a little tight." "So you did a less than stellar shoot, and your shitty diva attitude got you into trouble," I clarify. With a dead-eye look, he grabs his sunglasses and puts them back on. "It'll be fine." I pull out my phone and for the first time Google my brother. It takes a little scrolling, but he's right. On some of the trashier gossip sites, there are archived articles with phrases like "has been" and "washed up" and "fashion feature poison." In this moment, I'm eternally grateful my mom wouldn't know how to Google if her life depended on it. It doesn't look fine, I say. Jonah stands and walks into the house. How much debt are we talking here? I ask, following him through the door. He stops at a trash can, drops the empty bottle, and moves to the fridge to get another beer, which is about the only thing I see inside. Walking around a corner to make sure we're alone, he closes a tall set of double doors, enclosing us in his massive white kitchen. The credit card's alone, he says, pulling at the label on his bottle. I'm guessing maybe about 100. 1,000? My pulse takes off with a lurch. Then there's the house, he continues, and the Rover. I already got rid of the other cars. Jesus Christ, I sink onto a kitchen stool. Mom is not going to find out. His voice is deep with warning. It's none of your business, and it sure as hell isn't hers. She'll want to help, I start to say, but I can already read the answer in his expression. She can't help. Mom and Dad live a simple life on a small budget. The scale of this is beyond their comprehension, too. If I didn't routinely see the money floating around California and my industry, it would be well beyond mine as well. I sit back and think for a moment. Jonah has made a name for himself for a reason, and even though I think he should go back to the kind of photos he used to do, hell, our mom has had one of his earlier photographs, a black and white shot of a fence silhouetted by the setting sun hanging over her fireplace since he was 17. It's clearly not what he's built a career on. We'll figure something out, I tell him. He nods, but he doesn't look up from the floor, and inexplicably, my heart twists with protectiveness. People fucking love a comeback story. I can do this. Bring me your portfolio. I've got some calls to make. It takes a few hours and a lot of arguing from Jonah, but I think I've come up with a solution. What are you doing the 17th? I ask him. I have no idea how I'll get Evie to agree to something like this, but I'll have to figure that out later. Working on my tan? He says with a shrug. Just like yesterday and the day before that? In your leather jacket? He rocks back on the rear legs of one of his massive dining room chairs, staring at the ceiling. I lean over and kick him to redirect his attention. Evie and I have a shoot next week, and... Evie? He asks, grinning. Dude, shut up. Listen, I have a really good friend from New York who's a creative director at Vanity Fair. He owes me a favor, so I'm pretty sure he'll do this for me, I hope. For a feature film? Jonah asks, and I nod. He considers it before wrinkling his nose like he's smelled something bad. Who is it? Jamie Huang and Seamus... I stop. Are you seriously asking this? I'm trying to help you by putting my own ass on the line and... I suddenly realize I have no idea what time it is. Shit, where's my phone? I find it under a stack of photographs and let out a tight fuck when I see the time. I've got to go. Jonah has the nerve to look upset. What? Where? I have a meeting. I moved so I could come out to look for your dead body, and now I'm going to be late. I shove my phone in my pocket and find my keys on the dining room table, beneath another giant portfolio. Get whatever you need ready and be there by 9 on Friday the 17th. I'll have my assistant text you the address. After a somewhat late-night Saturday spent Uncle Carter trick-or-treating with Morgan and a Sunday recovering and researching, I get an email from Evie asking for some time in the morning to talk about the retreat. The mere idea sends a sharp spike of dread through my chest, not to mention the change to the photo shoot I have to tell her about now. There's no way she'll easily agree to it. Hell, I'm not even sure I would if the tables were turned. I'd ask myself what I was thinking, setting the whole thing up in the first place, but the truth is, I wasn't. Never in my life have I been so frazzled. We exchange a few short emails and agree on a time, and though it would be easier, not to mention quicker, for her to just text me, I get the feeling that after the odd intimacy retreat of our dinner on Friday, she's trying to put some walls back up. The phone call from my friend at Vanity Fair comes in just as I'm getting out of my car the next morning, so I'm running a few minutes late. Pulling a folder from my messenger bag, it's full of information and ideas I've gathered for the retreat. I pray to the gods of happy flings turned rivals that this is enough to soften Evie up and get her to sign off on Jonah as our photographer. Upstairs, Jess points me in the direction of the conference room. All the way down the hall, I can see Evie through the glass, her head bent so that her hair obstructs her face while she scribbles something in her notebook. Her skin is this insane combination of flawless and rosy that I've seen makeup artists try to mimic for years. Her brown eyes have thick lashes and a knowing gleam. Evie has that way about her, as if she's not often noticed in a crowd, maybe intentionally. But to me, she's like a beacon. Small but mighty, unassuming but poised. I really wish I could fucking see her without it feeling like I've had the wind knocked out of me. It would make feigning indifference so much easier. She has some sort of smoothie in front of her, and it matches the little jewels on the beret in her hair. Ugh, I am in deep. Sorry I'm a few minutes late, I take the seat across from her. Some stuff came up. Stuff? She asks, pushing the straw around in her drink. Work stuff, I clarify, and I hate the way my words come out like I'm explaining myself to her, laced with guilt. Anyway, Kylie sent me some things from the planner they used last year. I printed them up and added a few new ideas I thought might work. I place the packets on the table in front of her, avoiding her eyes and hoping she goes for the subject change. I'm sure she's wondering why I'm suddenly so helpful and Johnny on the spot about this retreat. I can feel her watching me, narrowed eyes tracking my movements as she picks up the papers I've given her and holds them warily. She still hasn't said anything, and when she looks down to the printouts, I busy myself straightening the rest of my papers, making sure she has a pen, and generally behaving as though I'm being a lot more helpful than I am. Oh, right, I say casually. I should mention before we get started, I need to switch the photographer for the VF shoot next week. She turns her face up to me. Her brows come together in confusion. Why? I debate whether I should lie and realize it's safer to just be honest. I thought we might hire Jonah. As in your brother, Jonah? Right. Scratching my eyebrow, I tell her, he's going through a bit of a rough patch, and I told him I'd try to get him on this job. She sets down the packet. You think they're going to be able to switch it out last minute? I lean in, relieved her first reaction wasn't rage. I try on a smile I hope feels like the expressive version of triumphant jazz hands. They already did. Only when her eyes go wide do I fully register what I've just said. Oh, fuck. You did it without talking to me? She asks slowly. Shaking my head, I say, I dropped my friend a line yesterday to see if it would even be possible, but he called and said it was a go before I got in this morning. Evie studies me for a few quiet beats. I think it's a conflict of interest. I think Brad would agree. There's an edge of threat in her tone, and I twist the cardboard band around my coffee cup while I think of how to respond. I'll talk to him. I'm not sure I understand what led to this, she says, confusion lacing her words. You told me the two of you don't get along. This is Jamie and Seamus's first big shoot. Do you really want to? How well Jonah and I get along isn't the point. He's the right guy for the job. Then why didn't you suggest him last week? Because I assumed he was busy. Why would you assume that? She asks, shaking her head a little. He's been gossip fodder for months. Heat rises in my neck with the humiliation that Evie knew all of this about Jonah and I didn't. I think we both know that what people say about us isn't always reflective of our ability to do our job. She nibbles her lower lip thoughtfully, but doesn't say anything else. Evie, calm as ever. It's not even that I mind your brother doing the shoot, she says at length. He's still a big name, even with all the controversy. She pauses, studying me some more. But did you think it would go over well with me for you to just roll over any input I have in this? You represent Jamie. I represent Seamus. This is a big shoot for Trick, and these are things you and I need to be incredibly thoughtful about. I do a series of nods to be agreeable, though probably one too many. If you don't mind that he's doing it and agree that he's a big name, why are you getting so pissed about this? I want to make a fist and punch myself in the mouth as soon as the words are out. Evie is acting anything but pissed right now. I need to stop letting my temper shoot out so abruptly with her. This combination of attraction and competition makes me completely insane. I see the angry flush rise in her cheeks, and the effect on me is a confusing rush of desire. But again, she stays calm, gathering her things and pushing back from the table. You're right, she says. What's done is done. I'll have Jess email you the wardrobe notes for Seamus's end of the shoot, as well as my thoughts on the information you've given me today for the retreat. She closes the folder around her printouts and stands. Justin can send Jess anything you need me to review. We're going to talk through our assistants now? I ask, looking up at her. It seems like the best idea, for a number of reasons. She walks around the table and leaves the room.
Chapter 13. Evie. Evie, you're going to break this machine, Daryl laments, putting her hand on my quad to slow down my leg extensions. What is with you? I offer up a breathless, Carter. Standing from the machine, I grab my water and take a few deep drinks. Sweat pours off me and everything burns. I am a beast this morning, but it feels amazing. I realize it's either kill myself here at the gym or go to work and punch someone in the solar plexus. I should probably be mortified about getting up and walking out of our meeting yesterday, but screw him and his perfect forearms and cute, crooked smile and diva brother. I'm so tired of wanting to shove him into the wall and then shove my hand down his pants. I am so over all of it. Not to poke the bear, she says, because I can see you're just a little on edge today, but to be clear, we don't like Carter anymore, right? No, we do not like Carter anymore. I use a towel to wipe the sweat from my forehead. And I'd appreciate it if you could remember that next time you're supposed to be my wing woman. You told me to be a badass and then melted as soon as he turned on the charm. Remember when you wanted to get back at Brandt and I went to your cousin's wedding as your lesbian fiancé? I kissed you. With tongue. That was me being Team Daryl. She laughs. I'm sorry, you're right. But to be fair, you really should have given me an adorkable warning because, well, shit, Evie, she says. He's completely fuckable. Not helping. I know I shouldn't be enjoying this so much, but look how much he riles you up. I knew you were bossy, but who knew you had such a power play fetish? A what? I stumble after her over to the free weights. You heard me. Do I even want to know? Amelia asks, racking her weights and looking between us. I shake my head, watching as she moves to the squat frame. Daryl leans against the metal bar, watching me. Evie's in denial, trying to convince herself that she hates Carter. Oh, I like Carter. Amelia bends her back, lowering for a deadlift. Coming back up, she says, he came in to sign some tax forms. I didn't think the rest of the HR women were going to let him leave, and that's saying something. That one is a charmer. You realize he's my nemesis, right? I say. When she finishes her reps, Amelia guides me into position for my squats, with the bar against my shoulders and behind my neck. Your nemesis. You are so cute. Are you poisoned by his charm, too? She smiles at me. Shut up and squat. She startles as if she's just remembered something. Oh, you will never believe who Brad just signed. I stop, locking the bar into place and meeting her eyes in the mirror. If you say Gabe Vestes, I'm going to scream. That's right. The same Gabe you mentioned having lunch with Brad right before the merge went public. I don't know exactly who's doing what, but something tells me Brad has his hands in a couple cookie jars. I knew something was off about that. Brad got caught calling him a no-talent hack when I was still at Alterman. It didn't make sense that they'd suddenly decided to mend their fences. I step away from the squat frame and turn to face them both. Likely, Brad knew about the merger beforehand, and if he knew which of the CTM agents were getting the boot, he'd know to swoop in and make friends with Gabe again. Just another shady move, Amelia says. Why do you think he took Kylie off retreat planning? Daryl asks, sitting on the bench next to us. Amelia considers this. Maybe he's keeping her busy in other ways. She grins at us. Maybe they're having an affair. I shiver, repulsed. I'd like to think Kylie has a little more sense than that. See, Carter, I don't think the absolute worst of her after all.
And better taste.
Amelia looks at her watch. I have a payroll meeting I can't be late for. A smart woman would leave a workout like the one I've just had and go get something healthy for breakfast. An egg white omelet, maybe. Or something whole grain. A smoothie. Apparently, I am not a smart woman. I go straight to Sidecar Donuts and order 3 butter and salts and a giant latte. But I am smart enough to leave 2 of the donuts on my desk, bringing only 1 to the team breakfast meeting scheduled for 8 a.m. in the conference room. Coffee? Check. Sugar and carbs? Check. Adjusted attitude? In progress. My stomach and attitude plummet when I walk in and find Carter already there. I was really hoping I'd have at least a few more minutes to rally. He glances up, does a slight double take, and attempts a smile that looks a lot like a sneer before looking back down at his phone. After yesterday, I don't even know how to handle myself in a room alone with him. My heart is pounding, my lady parts on high alert, and my free hand gets all tight-fisty and punchy at my side. Confusing as hell. Plus, I'm suddenly very aware of the donut I'm holding and the fact that Carter is having nothing but sparkling water for a breakfast meeting. Water. I hate him. He's flanked by 2 empty chairs, but I ignore them, pointedly taking a seat on the other side of the table. Battle lines drawn. I can hear the buzzing hum of the overhead lights. Carter's pen makes an exaggerated scritch, scritch sound in a notebook as he pulls his attention away from his phone long enough to seemingly jot down a flurry of ideas. I'd bet solid money he's really just scribbling down the alphabet or a manifesto about all the ways he plans to be underhanded in the coming months. The room fills as the rest of the department slowly filters in. Breakfast meetings are the worst. No human alive is in a hurry to spend an hour first thing in the morning with Brad. We all look toward the door at the sound of our boss's booming voice and see Kylie jogging in her 4-inch stiletto heels to keep up behind him. With barely a glance at me, Brad looks down at my donut and wordlessly swipes it directly from the tabletop into the trash can just beside my feet. I hear a strangled gasp come out of my mouth.
Come on, Evie,
Brad says as he pulls out his chair. He looks up and catches my horrified expression.
What? Are you depressed? Trust me, you don't need that.
I have no idea what to say to this. A storm seems to build in my chest and I can feel my face turning red.
Except that was my breakfast.
He doesn't answer, just sits down and quietly tells Kylie to get the laptop set up. I think I hear Rose mumble something about a son of a bitch, but otherwise there's only stunned silence from the rest of the table around me.
We're having some food brought in, Kylie squeaks, so you'll get something then, like fruit and organic bars and stuff.
I don't want fruit or an organic bar. I want the motherfucking donut I brought in. No, what I really want is to lift my coffee and toss it at Brad, right in Mr. Congeniality's face. But I can't do that, either. Looking down to regroup, I see that 2 buttons on my top are open, revealing my pink bra beneath. I gasp, quickly fastening them closed again. I know this hasn't recently happened. I know that it's been like this since I first walked into the room, because I realize in hindsight that I felt the draft on my chest for the last few minutes. Carter is right here. Across from me, we were the only 2 people in the room. It explains his double take and sneaky little smile. And it also explains why I'm going to kill him later. My pulse is a booming drum in my ear. I stare at the side of Carter's face so hard I hope his cheekbones begin to ache under the force of it. As the woman from catering comes in pushing a cart laden with fruit and fat-free, taste-free bran muffins, I think of my delicious donut and wonder what everyone would do if I just reached into the trash can, brushed it off, and went to town. I'm so hungry, I'm tempted to try. Instead, I abandon hope of sugar and delicious carbs since, by the looks of it, we're all about to be subjected to Brad's 50-year-old man breakfast. Great. Of course, everyone is too polite to go get anything to eat until Brad does first. and he seems to be in no immediate hurry. My stomach gnaws at itself like a starving wolf, so fuck it. I stand and walk to the food, bypassing the muffin bricks to pile a bunch of berries on a small paper plate. When I return to the table, Brad is eyeing me like I've just broken a cardinal rule. Rose's smirk is aimed at her hands folded on the table. Rose and I don't always have the same sense of humor, but I know that if we make eye contact right now, she will lose her shit.
Let's get started.
Brad taps a few papers in front of him and leans back in his chair, glancing at Rose.
How did it go with Tom on Monday?
Good, she tells him. Paramount's contract's signed. Everything's moving along. He nods, pleased.
Carter, what's going on for the Vanity Fair shoot?
Carter slides his eyes to me.
All set. Who's doing the photography again?
Hesitating, Carter pretends to need to look at his notes before he says,
It's Jonah. Jonah Aaron. No relation?
Brad asks distractedly, assuming.
Relation? Brother?
Brad looks up and considers Carter frankly for a few seconds.
The photographer is your brother?
And this is it. This is when Carter will finally get what's coming to him. I didn't overreact. This entire situation is bullshit, and the best part is that I won't need to do a thing because Brad will do it for me. Donut incident forgiven, I settle into my seat, wishing I had some popcorn instead of berries for the show. Carter's face slowly blooms red.
That's right, my younger brother. I assure you, he's fully qualified.
Brad's expression remains unreadable, and I think I can hear Carter sweating. I could kiss Brad for this. Come to think of it, I think I missed Boss's day. I make a mental note to send Brad a card.
You might have even seen some of his work in Rolling Stone, Carter continues. I can get you a list of references if you'd like.
Silence. You could hear a pin drop, and I gleefully swing my eyes to Brad, waiting for the explosion. Here it comes. Any minute now. But it doesn't. Instead, a smile worthy of the Grinch slowly spreads across Brad's face until I can see every one of his perfectly capped teeth.
Now that is what I've been talking about, he says and slaps a hand on the table.
Son of a bitch.
Carter, rallying the troops and giving us an inside edge.
Brad all but leaps across the table to give Carter a bro-pal high five.
I'll tell you something. I am not surprised. Everyone watch this guy, he says, pointing around the table. This is how you get shit done.
I sink down in my chair, furious. We already had a photographer, so I'm not sure what specifically Brad thinks has gotten done. Carter shouldn't have made the switch without asking me, and he knows it. That Brad is now giving him a verbal handjob is infuriating. It sets Carter apart in a way Brad never has before at these meetings. There is an unspoken pecking order in agenting, defined primarily by who brings in the most publicity and money. And this year, that is likely to be me. But there are other factors, too, such as having a penis. Apparently, that's a big one. There's some awkward shuffling around the table. Either people don't like being told to emulate the newest newbie around town, or they agree with me that hiring your brother for a cover shoot is a screaming mile past Sketchy Town. But I make a point of not looking up, refusing to make eye contact. Taking a calming breath, I lift my coffee to my lips, truly enjoying it as I imagine it scalding Carter's lap instead of my tongue. I glance down when my phone buzzes with a text.
Can you make sure to follow up with Seamus about the start time next week?
I blink, staring at the screen. Brad has moved on from his gushing over Carter, and now Ashton's voice is a nasal lull in the background.
Did you send this to the wrong person?
Is this Evelyn Abbey?
Why would I forget to follow up with my own client?
I was just making sure.
Just contact Jess with the list of information you need.
Beside me, he snorts out a dickish little laugh and shakes his head, sliding his phone onto the tabletop. Livid, I type one more thought.
You could have given me a heads up that my shirt was unbuttoned.
Your shirt was unbuttoned. You're sitting right across from me. It would be impossible for you to not have noticed.
Well, I didn't. Winky face.
Holy shit. Did Carter just type the bird flip of smiley faces? Did Carter just give me the smiley finger? My heart is pounding so hard I can barely hear what Ashton is saying. I'm sure I look like a mouth-breathing wrestler, but my thoughts won't budge away from how much I despise Carter this very second. I'm not entirely sure what this feeling is because I've never had it before, but I think it's unmitigated rage. I think my brain has just declared war on Carter Aaron. In my office, I descend upon my other two donuts with a kind of desperate, two-handed, open-mouthed vigor. Coffee and berries long gone, these donuts are my entire life now. But because the universe is a cat and I am but a fuzzy ball of string, Carter walks in right when I take down half of one donut in a single bite.
Hey, Evil,
he says, eyes on his phone.
Jonah needs to start at 11 next Friday. Does that work?
He looks up and startles at the sight of my face, both cheeks bulging with food.
I'll give you a second to answer.
And then he just stands there, watching me chew behind my hand, his eyebrows raised in amusement. When the chewing takes me longer than either of us would have liked, he adds,
"You must have been starving,"
with a mocking half-smile. Swallowing, I say, "You may have noticed Brad knocking my breakfast into the trash." He eyes the sugar crumbs littering the bag on my desk.
"Good thing you had spares."
I make a point of walking to my door and dramatically motioning to where Jess is sitting in front of her computer next to the other assistants. Carter follows me and looks out.
"Yeah?"
"That is my assistant, Jess. Talk to her about scheduling." He peeks out again, offering Jess a wave and an adorable smile.
"How's your mom's cat doing?"
he calls out. Her face lights up. "Good. First couple of nights were tough, but the stitches come out next week. Thanks for asking." Her eyes swing to me, and she looks like a deer caught in headlights. "You have got to be kidding."
"So, can we?"
he says. I turn my head to see him looking down at me. He is entirely too close. I'll never be able to get any real leverage kicking him in the balls at this angle. Straightening, I take a step back.
"Can we what?" "Can we start shooting at 11 instead of noon next week?"
He says it slowly, as if the problem is me and my comprehension, and not the fact that he's a plotting weasel.
"Jonah has a thing at 3.
I should be difficult and insist he go through Jess with this, but apparently the Team Evie ship has sailed. "God, you're a pain in the ass. Let me check my calendar." I move to sit down behind my desk, saying pointedly, "I sure appreciate being involved in the coordination." He sighs.
"It wasn't like that, Evie."
"It wasn't?" I turn on my computer, typing in my password with shaking hands. I hope he doesn't notice. The last thing I want is for Carter to see how much this gets to me. He pushes his hands into his pockets. "Look, if Brad had an issue with Jonah doing the shoot, then okay. We could discuss how to adjust the plan, but he didn't." Carter clearly knows as well as I do that Brad approved of this for reasons completely unfathomable to either of us. Even a nearsighted dog in the room would know that what Carter did was outright nepotism.
"Are you using Brad Kingman as your litmus test for honorable behavior?" "I just want to have a job," he says. "My mistake was in not getting an okay from you up front. I get that. Can we move on?"
Staring at him in the answering quiet, I finally say, "Do I really have a choice?" I must have made my point, because for the first time since I've known Carter, he doesn't have a comeback. "Next week, Friday?" I ask, back to business. Carter nods. 11 should work. I told Seamus to get there at 8:30 for makeup anyway to make sure he gets there on time. Carter's eyes go wide.
"That was pretty smart."
"Try not to look so surprised." This makes him laugh, but he doesn't bother to correct me. Just as Carter is about to turn and leave, Rose ducks into my office, closing the door behind her.
Do you want me to go, or...
Carter asks her. You're fine. You can stay. I want both of your opinions.
Oh, great. Here comes the gossip.
I glance up at Carter, unsure as to whether he's been subjected to her yet. He's got his blank face on, which means he probably already knows how indiscreet Rose can be. I constantly fear that any legitimate work conversation with her will devolve into gossip and name-dropping. It's not that I'm necessarily against gossip and name-dropping, but it has to be done in the right way with the right people. Discreet people, for Christ's sake, who do it only with the right combination of irony and credibility. But instead of slowly building an intriguing story of flirting or client drama or sexual harassment, Rose drops an incredibly personal grievance right in the middle of my office. Ashton's bonus was about $7,000 bigger than mine. My eyes widen. Carter takes a small step back as if he's trying to blend into the background.
How do you know that? I ask.
We talk about money all day with clients, but rarely do we share our own income with colleagues. And I'm guessing it's for precisely this reason. Nothing is ever as clear and fair as we expect it to be.
We were talking yesterday about our projected year-end totals, you know, with the merge. Everyone's head seems to be on the chopping block. So we went back to our desks and our bonus statements were there. I guess because we were already talking money, he was comfortable enough to tell me what he got.
Were his signings and bookings bigger than... I begin, but she cuts me off, shaking her head.
The same, she says. We were almost dead even.
She looks over to Carter.
Bullshit, right?
Unacceptable, I say.
You need to ask Brad, or go straight to accounting and have them check the numbers.
Rose gasps.
I can't do that.
Then you're out $7,000. I shrug.
This sucks, she growls.
Talk to Brad, Carter gently urges. Naive Carter. As if Brad doesn't already know. She looks up at him, miserable.
He won't care.
I lift my hands in front of me, exasperated.
Honestly, Rose, if you're only going to complain here, where I have no power to help you at all, the money must not be the reason you're in this job.
She looks down to the floor, nodding for a few seconds.
I know, I know. It's just so frustrating.
I get it, sweets. But you've got to be your own advocate. No one else is going to be that for you. With a small smile of thanks, she turns and leaves. Carter steps away from the wall.
Wow, Evie, that was a bit of tough love.
I look up at his face, at the wide green eyes behind his glasses, his clean-shaven jaw and mussy hair. It's a good thing he's so pretty because the attitude is not making any friends today.
You could have added anything you wanted to.
He considers this for a few seconds and then shrugs.
Is she sure that's really the case? I've never had any sort of pay disparity.
He seems to realize what he's just said.
I mean, obviously, I know that sort of thing happens, but...
He winces, backpedaling.
That sucks for her. Hopefully she'll get it fixed.
He can't be serious. This isn't some rare case of a mathematical error in finance, Carter. This sort of thing happens every day. It's happened to me.
Really? It's just, you seem so in command all the time. I have a hard time imagining anyone taking something that's yours.
He moves another step closer, leaning back against my desk, facing me. It's so close, it's almost like we're friendly or flirting. But obviously we aren't. It happens in this business all the time, I say quietly. You just don't see it. It doesn't affect you.
It should.
I nod.
I agree. So what do you think we should do?
I don't miss the way he looks at my lips for a tiny beat, and it suddenly feels like we're not talking about pay disparity anymore.
I don't know,
I whisper. But I definitely feel like making out with Carter right now would help lead us in the right direction. His eyes seem to roam all over my face and then lower. He leans in. For the span of 2, 3, 4 frantic heartbeats, I think he's going to kiss me.
Your shirt seems intent on staying open today, he whispers, nodding. Startled, I follow his eyes and, sure enough, my two top buttons have popped open again, leaving a good deal of cleavage perfectly visible to both of us. Oh, I look up at him, feeling my cheeks heat. I start to smile at him, but instead of leaning closer to kiss me like I still think he's going to, he leans back, offering an unreadable expression before he turns and leaves my office.
Chapter 14. Carter. That was close.
If this isn't about a bank robbery, I don't think I want to hear it.
MC, I nearly put my face in Evie's boobs in her office.
Okay, no, I want to hear this.
She's so badass and straightforward, but just sexy and intimidating all at once, and her shirt keeps popping open. And then I went to tell her, and it was like impossible to want to leave without kissing.
Dude.
Just keep reminding me she's Lucifer.
I mean, not really, she isn't. She's the nicest person.
It seemed like she wanted to kiss me.
Or bite your face.
In a good way.
In a bad way.
Whose side are you on?
The side where the two of you get married and she gives birth to a fully formed toddler who draws on your bedspread with toothpaste.
Dick.
Bye.
Chapter 15. Evie. If I thought I was angry with Carter before, now there's humiliation thrown into the mix. Over the next couple of days, I spend entirely too much time looping back through those few seconds he'd leaned in and looked at me like I wasn't the enemy. I must have appeared to melt in my chair. With any other romantic failure, there's the regret and the replaying of the good times and bad times. Maybe there's even the occasional awkward run-in around town because, as huge as L.A. is, it feels tiny. But it's a different matter altogether to work alongside a romantic failure, to pass him in the hall, to see him at meetings, to be forced into a tiny space to plan company retreats together. I get to the small conference room first and take a seat on the couch at the far end near the windows. It gives me the benefit of being able to see Carter walking all the way down the hall and toward me. Not the worst view in the world. Escorting the planner from Corporate Fun. She's put together in a bland, anonymous way, but Carter, because he's the devil, exudes sex. Hands in his pockets, lazy, confident stride, crooked smile. Is it more noticeable now because I'm not getting any? Probably. Or is it just how he is? His dark dress pants fit him perfectly, sitting low on his slim hips and hugging his quads. I swear, I can see the outline of his cock along his thigh. His dress shirt today is a subtle blue and white check pattern and seems like it was poured on him. It looks so good. When he smiles more broadly at something the planner says, his entire face lights up and somehow it looks sweet again. I'm ruined. I can see that now. I look bleakly out at the next few years of my life, working here or somewhere else, and unable to get over my hate crush on Carter Aaron. Or even worse, watching him with someone else. I'm doomed. I stand when they enter, smoothing my skirt before shaking hands with the woman, Libby Truman, who already seems enamored with Satan's errand boy and his stupid perfect face. As she holds onto his upper arm, she gushes about how funny he was on the walk down here. On the walk down the hall. 30 seconds tops. How amazing. No doubt. We sit, do the perfunctory explanation of what we need, and honestly, I feel like we could have had this meeting over the phone. We require someone to plan some games for the group of 50 or so people over 2 days. We require activities that won't A, make us all cringe, or B, trigger our grossly competitive natures. We require alcohol. That's it. It's pretty simple. But whenever possible, people like to come to the P&D offices for meetings. It's for the exact reason I can see Libby occasionally looking out through the glass walls of the room. She's hoping to spot a celebrity,
Unfortunately for her, she only sees Justin, who peeks his head in about 5 minutes into things.
Jet Payne is here. He's waiting for us upstairs. Also, Kylie wanted me to let you know that she's overordered for the break room Keurig, and you're free to take a box or two home.
Carter stands with a smile.
Thanks, Justin.
My jaw drops. You double booked? I ask him, wearing a tight, fuck you smile of my own.
I guess I did. Sorry about that,
he says, as if it were purely accidental and he's not meticulous about his calendar. He stands, reaching forward to shake Libby's hand.
Great to meet you, Libby. Evie can handle the rest of the discussion, and make sure she validates your parking. Looking forward to what you two have planned.
Libby, a little breathless, over-exclaims,
It will be great!
About an hour later, I wrap up the meeting with Libby, still fuming, and head back to my office while checking the rest of today's schedule on my phone. I have 45 minutes to get across town to meet Sarah Hill for a hair appointment. We just landed Sarah a part in an adaptation of a runaway best-selling teen novel, and the studio insists her hair be a specific shade of blue for the role. It's in her contract that her agent and the producer be present for quality control. What it means, essentially, is 4 hours in a salon, trying to stay alert enough to be able to tell the subtle difference between 15 different shades of blue hair. Passing Carter's office, I stop dead in my tracks, seeing that he's already put 2 boxes of K-cups in the middle of his desk. When I was a teenager, my father was strict. It was the opposite of Daryl's family, who basically let her run around with whoever she wanted. I wasn't allowed to date until I was 16, and even then, there were rules. I could date as much as I wanted, but I couldn't have a boyfriend, which meant no consecutive dates with the same guy. I'm sure the intent there was that I didn't get too serious with any one guy, because serious leads to sex. Their plan worked, mostly. By 11th grade, I hadn't had sex yet, had never really even come close. And then I met Kai Paiola. I managed to sneak as much time with him as I could, away from my parents' watchful eyes. The night of the homecoming game, our senior year, we found ourselves in a bedroom at a party. Somewhere in another room, Santana was playing on repeat, his sexy guitar riffs egging action along, and I wanted to have sex with Kai. I was pretty damn close, too. His pants were around his ankles, and he was checking to see if the condom he'd carried in his wallet since sophomore year had expired, and I knew I was at a crossroads. Go one way, and that was it. We'd have sex, and there would be no turning back, or pull my skirt down from around my armpits, and my hymen would live another day. Needless to say, I never saw my virginity again. Loitering in the hall outside Carter's office, staring at those damn K-cups on his desk, I feel that same potent blend of thrill and dread. If I follow through with the plan forming in my head, I won't be innocent anymore. And so, 5 minutes later, the K-cups are all swapped out. The pods inside no longer matching what it says on the boxes, and I'm on my way to the salon. Nobody the wiser. Same grape flavor. Now in decaf. Friday may go on record as being the best day of my life because it's the day that Carter Aaron can't keep track of a single thought at work. It's a little like watching a lion with a limp. It's just not something you see very often, making it incredibly hard to look away. He wasn't kidding when he said he can't function without coffee. Apparently, he walked into the women's room and stared at the wall, obviously shocked that the urinals were gone, until Jess emerged from a stall and steered him in the right direction. He spluttered his way through a conference call with Smashbox Studios about the setup for the Vanity Fair shoot next Friday, and afterwards stood in the hall confused, before turning into his office and sitting down in front of the cup of decaf I'd stealthily placed on his desk. I wonder if I'm turning into a horrible human being. Really. Because I am completely alive, watching all of this. Who does this kind of backhanded crap? Well, aside from everyone in this business. Except, I've never stooped this low. And as soon as I really start to think about how far I've strayed from my own ideals, my guilt begins to eat at me. I dial Steph's number, thankful when she answers on the first ring. I'm a terrible human, I say in lieu of a greeting. Is this for anything specific or just in general? She asks. I think about it. A little of both, I think. Do you want to tell me about it, or should I have plausible deniability? I can hear voices and the sound of glasses and cutlery clinking in the background, so I assume she's meeting someone and doesn't have much time. Are you busy? I can stop by and confess tonight. Just waiting on a casting agent, she says. And by the way, you'll never guess what my assistant told me this morning. I lean to the right, where I can see Carter at his desk, staring blankly at a pencil. I bite back a laugh. What? She slept with Carter's brother last night. This gets my attention. No, I say, straightening. Your assistant? Yep. Jesus, this town is small. Where did this happen? At some party. They didn't exactly do a lot of talking, and she only put two and two together this morning. Honestly, if I weren't busy hating Carter Aaron, I would be texting him immediately to share this so we could laugh together. Unable to resist, I lean over again and peek into his office. Today just keeps giving. And, from what I gather, it was a ringing endorsement for the Aaron family. A fact you'd have personal knowledge of if you two would get your heads out of your asses. I groan. Do not remind me. Speaking of his brother, we have a shoot with him next week. Now I'm going to be thinking of him banging Anna. Steph laughs into the line. Tell him she says hi. Yeah, I don't think so. Okay, well, tell Carter his suit is hanging in my bathroom. He needs it for Friday. His suit? He took Morgan trick-or-treating so we could go out, and she threw up all over him. I'd yell at him for letting her eat an entire bag of candy, but I got a grown-up party and hotel sex, so... No, Mistress Overshare, not today. Don't tell me about your sex life, and definitely don't tell me cute things about Carter. He's a monster. Keep telling yourself that. Okay, I see my person walking in. Love you, and stop being a terrible human. Why does the universe do this to me? I'm riding high on inefficient, under-caffeinated Carter when the world has to remind me that he might not be entirely awful. I think it's safe to say that I've messed up, and maybe Steph's right. I am a terrible human. The anxiety gnaws at me a little during a lunch meeting with Adam Elliott, and when I'm with America's favorite aging hottie, I can't be distracted. Not even a little. Carter isn't in his office when I return, so I can't confess, can't even give him the fully caffeinated cup of joe I got him on the way back from lunch. I open my email and absently reach for the bottle of moisturizer on my desk. But instead of reading, and instead of cultivating the lingering guilt, my mind goes back to Carter forgetting Brad's name this morning when they passed in the hall. That one was pretty great. I rub my hands together and smooth a little on my elbows and my face, and a little more on my legs as I recall Jess telling me how Carter got off on the wrong floor earlier and sat down at Evan Curtis's desk up in legal. I've repeated the process two more times before the guilt returns and I realize what I need to do. I need to replace the coffee and fess up. Karma is a bitch I do not need coming after me. I'm just reaching for the phone to ring Jess and confess, to ask if she'll help me switch it all back when a call comes in that I've been waiting for. 45 minutes of actress flattering later, a knock sounds at my door. Come in, I say, eyes still on my computer screen as the bottom of the door whispers across the carpet. Hey, did you see that email about the... Holy hell! Jess gasps, and I look up to meet her wide eyes. What? What? She shakes her head, a hand coming over her mouth. Evie, oh my God, I'll be right back. She rushes out of the room, returning a moment later with Daryl at her heels and closing the door behind them. What's going on? I ask. Why are you two looking at me like that? Daryl can barely keep it together. What did you do, Garfield? What? I reach for the compact I keep in the bottom drawer, and I immediately see it.
my hands. Mostly my palms and up to my wrists are orange. Oh my God. You look like a construction cone, Daryl says, and she finally loses it, barely managing to add, you're making me crave buffalo wings. Oh my God, would you shut it? And fumbling with the mirror, I manage to nearly hurl it across the room. My face is orange too. Not just orange, but shimmery. I look like a sparkly circus peanut. Daryl moves to stand next to me. What did you use? I didn't... I stop, reaching for the lotion bottle I used earlier. No. Unscrewing the cap, I bring it up to my nose and sniff. No. Instead of the subtle vanilla scent I'm used to, I now notice a faint chemical smell. No, I growl, my voice low and savage. I'm going to kill him. He put sunless tanner in your lotion bottle? Daryl whispers, sounding horrified, but also a little impressed. Jess runs out and runs right back in again. Coming around the desk, she kneels on the floor next to me, pulling a makeup wipe from a little plastic package. I'm now afraid for him. She reaches for my arm and starts to scrub. Okay, a lot of it is coming off. It's just bronzer. Daryl laughs. Give it 8 hours. Oh, Evie, what happened? A deep, mocking voice says, and we all look up to see a smiling Carter leaning against the doorframe. Jess practically falls backward in her attempt to flee. You did this.
You want to start pointing fingers, Chef Decaf?
I giggle in spite of myself. Pardon? Pushing off the doorway, he steps closer. Daryl and Jess, wisely, clear the room.
I ran home at lunch to make some of my own coffee because the cups here just weren't cutting it. But sure enough, the ones at home are decaf too. In the grocery store parking lot, I couldn't remember where I parked my car and nearly got arrested trying to get into a different silver Audi.
I feel a surge of pride rush through my blood.
You did?
He grins, shaking his head at me.
I did. Not cool.
Holding out an arm for him to inspect, I say,
You don't get to come in here and play the victim card, sir. I wouldn't dare.
He steps closer. So close that I can feel the warmth of his skin against mine. The playfully contentious mood slips away, and I can practically feel the sweep of his attention as he moves his gaze briefly to my lips. As if he might kiss me again. No way. I think we both know that won't ever happen.
I liked you, he whispers.
An ache worms itself between my ribs when he says this, and my response comes out more raw than I'd planned.
I liked you too.
He stares at me, unblinking. Evie,
I'm just glad I figured out who you really are before we got in too deep.
From deep in a pile of bubbles in Steph's bathtub, I address everyone and my innermost core at once.
I'm going to bury him.
We're all here, crowded into Michael and Steph's small bathroom. Daryl, Amelia, Jess, Steph, and, of course, me. Naked and slightly less orange.
That's great, honey,
Daryl says, handing me another loofah around the shower curtain.
Just not tonight.
You have to admit that was pretty fucking clever, Amelia says, to figure out how to use your lotion fetish against you.
I look sullenly at the murky water around me.
Makeup kept most of the bronzer from absorbing into my face, and it washed off pretty easily.
But my palms and elbows absorbed more of the color, and both remain a faded, sickly shade of orange.
It's not a fetish, more of a nervous tic, and he didn't figure anything out. I told him about